I've always said that in the talent acquisition industry, not a lot of intellectuals have stayed in the space for very long. So when I meet somebody that is as intellectual and analytically focused about talent acquisition as I am, like Gambala Sankare, I'm always drawn to them. Gambala has had an incredible career working at companies like WEX, leading talent acquisition at the NBA, and most recently as the head of HR at Pretty Flaherty in Maine. Gambala and I dive into a ton of topics, including the talent acquisition industry as it stands right now and where it's going, his time at the NBA, and his support of his home country of Ghana, not to mention why Maine is a great place to visit and live. I really enjoyed this conversation. Hell, I enjoy every conversation I have with Gambala, and this was no different. I'm so excited for you to listen to this episode and let us know what you think about all of his insights. He's a great guy. And there's a lot to learn. Enjoy.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am here today with a good friend of mine, Gambala Sankare. Currently, he's the head of HR at Pretty Flaherty and formerly the head of talent acquisition at WEX and the NBA. Gambala, how you doing?
Doing well, it's nice to see you again. It's been a while.
It has. I always enjoy our conversations offline, online, wherever they are. This is actually, in fact, the second episode of Higher Learning that we're recording. First one was unable to be released for reasons that we won't get into. If anybody wants to hit up the secret archives of Higher Learning, just shoot me a note. We'll see what we can do. But I'm so excited to have you here because, listen, you love talent acquisition and you look at it from an intellectual perspective. I like to think that I do the same. And so we share a lot of like common thought there. And so I'm really excited to dive into that a little bit and share with our listeners some of your great insights and learnings. So let's start here, okay? It's kind of a crazy time for the recruiting market right now, right? We had the great resignation a few years ago, and we had recruiters getting salaries and jobs unlike we'd ever seen before. It was the highest of the highs from what I've ever seen in my career, at least. And then we started to see that over the next couple years, the market started to turn a little bit. And unfortunately, there was a lot of layoffs and rifts in the space. And we've seen people who have been displaced from roles. And now we're starting to see things, I don't know, heat back up. So I'm just interested, what are you seeing in the market? What do you think are some of the headwinds going on right now? And where do you think things are going forward overall?
Well, no, I'm glad you touched that, and you touched up on that, and I think I've spent the last 5, 6 months talking to a lot of my colleagues and folks in the industry, what their experience has been, and I can honestly say, if you're someone that's sitting there thinking, how is the market doing? What is the market doing? I can tell you the market is changing, right, for the better. It's definitely going to be different in Q4 than it was, in Q1 or ending Q1, early Q2. But it was definitely challenging. It was definitely a struggle. If you were in the talent space, if you were in the HR space, I mean, I've had folks and I've had, I mean, senior leaders, in HR and in the talent space tell me, you know what? They are going back to school to, study a new industry, right? Because they've had it. Like it has been that big of a change. And for me, look, I've always believed that layoffs, and especially what happened, early this spring, it's really a reflection of management more than that individual that is, getting that severance, conversation or layoff conversation and so on, right? So I've spent a lot of time talking to folks that have been in those situations, just letting them know and just kind of giving them an opportunity to decompress about how they're feeling, and then letting them know that, look, it's not you at all. It's really a reflection of the management of the company that you're in. But it was definitely a slug. It's definitely a struggle. It pains for me to see and hear some of the awful experiences. It seems like, layoffs started happening, and then organizations lost their sense of humanity in some ways in terms of how they're treating applicants and candidates in general, the experience and a lot of the conversations that we've had, online and offline about, just the hiring experience in general. It seems like companies just like everything just went out the gate. I've had experiences where folks were sharing with me that they will go through interview process, they'll go through 12, 13 rounds of interviews, And then ultimately being told that, oh, actually, we need this position to be on site, or the position needs to be on hold, and so on. Well, you have, you know, recruiting teams reach out to candidates wanting to schedule interviews, but then ghost them, right? And not show up, right? All of these things are just like completely day and night from, you know, where we were in 2021, 2020, and so on. But I still think, I still believe that, you know, it will get back to those rates again. I still think that there's a definite need in the industry, in any industry, you know, when it comes to really good, you know, highly capable, highly intelligent talent acquisition specialists and leaders and so on, and HR leadership and HR managers and so on. So I do think that you will see that change happen, you know, end of Q4, early Q1 next year, getting back to maybe not the astronomical numbers that we saw in 2021, but getting really close to that.
I love that. I'll give a little bit of my personal insight. I concur with a lot of the things you talked about. And quite frankly, to see the lack of humanity in some of the experiences and how things fall apart the way they do. You know, what's interesting about our industry in particular is that we're a bellwether a lot of time for the economy or the market and where things are going. We tend to see it up front because we're actually seeing the business decisions being made until it becomes news a month, 2 months down the road. And so what I've seen in 2023, and I've said this a couple times, it's been an absolute fist fight, right? For a lot of industries, but particularly for our business. We've been lucky in that we're diversified and that we have offshore, nearshore consulting. We have different things that we do that when things get a little more uncertain, people turn to in terms of those types of services. But I think one of the things that really has been most interesting to me, and not in a great way, is that a lot of times we think about, you know, is there a lot of hiring happening? Are not the hiring not happening? The economy's bad, it's good. What's going on? What's the unemployment rate? What's interesting to me is that deals fall apart, right, all across the board with the slightest little breeze of wind in a bad economy. It seems like people are, you know, unwilling, or the slightest thing can happen that will throw things off course. And it's much like you're talking about, going through 12 interviews and all of a sudden it's like, we're changing the requirements, or this isn't exactly perfect and so we're going to move away from it. When you're in a robust economy and money is flowing and deals are happening across all different lines of industry, it seems like, you know, like a skyscraper in the wind, like it's very hard to knock off its course.
It seemed like, you know, companies were looking for any possible way to say no to somebody, right? And, you know, they will take them a longer journey and then find something at the end and like, no, we're not interested in it. But the reality is, look, you know, this is a reflection of the culture of the organization, right? And at some point it's going to come back and bite them, you know, where the sun doesn't shine, right? Like, sure. It's going to come back. And it's a reflection of the culture and the reputation of the organization. And if you need talent, if you need a talent during the summer or early spring, and you treated them as such and, you know, didn't end up completing the hiring, I'm telling you, you haven't closed that gap. You're gonna come back into the marketplace again. You're gonna come seeking for that talent again. And those experiences, and I'll tell you right now, candidates talk to each other.
Well, let me interject real quickly, because this is something I believe passionately. Especially if you're a big company, one of the most underrated forms of marketing is the people who apply to your company, the experience they have in the interview process, if they hear back, get feedback or not. And here's what I mean by that, right? If you're a big company, many times you have 10,000 plus applicants, right, for all of the different roles in your organization. And how they feel as they go through that experience, whether they apply and don't hear anything, or they go all the way through 12 interviews and things fall apart, that person is A, unlikely to recommend that place to work to a friend, B, maybe another opportunity comes up that's a better fit and they're like, no thanks. Or C, they actually might not want to be a customer of your services and products. And because it's happening at such scale, that can be super detrimental. Word of mouth, grassroots marketing is still something that's very real. And so I find that not only is it the right thing to do from a moral and ethical perspective in terms of how you manage candidates in general, I think it's a great, important business bottom line objective to do right by them. So I didn't mean to interject, but I think that companies fail to recognize that.
I mean, you're absolutely right. And look, you know, I've served in positions where, you know, you build talent acquisition strategies knowing that your talent marketing and engagement and branding experience that you want to provide for candidates and so on, you know, will drive the value for the organization, right? You can actually measure some of these things to the sense in how it drives revenue in the organization, right? So, you know, if you think about some of these areas, you know, if you're sports and entertainment and, you know, retail and so on, these are folks, the candidates that you that are going through the hiring process are also, you know, the customers that are consuming the product that you're providing. So if you're not treating them right in that process, now, guess what? It's going to have a bottom line effect in the organization. And I think many organizations fail to realize that and connect the dots. And that's why you need really good, you know, talent acquisition strategies, because the right strategy allows you to be able to kind of pinpoint specifically. And there's data around all of these things, right? There's platforms that will allow you to enrich some of this data to see specifically how I am treating that the NPS score of each candidate, you know, as they come through my process, is impacting, you know, the value and the revenues of the organization going forward.
Yeah, I think there's a false narrative that if somebody doesn't get the job, they're going to be unhappy anyway. So what does it matter? That's so not true. You don't have to go through the entire process, get an offer and accept an offer to think it was a good process or walk away feeling good about the company and the people you met. Quite the contrary. So I've had numerous situations for our own company where somebody hasn't gotten the job initially for whatever reason, either on their decision or our decision, and ultimately came back and been some of our most prosperous employees. And so this long-term mindset, this long-term greedy mindset that we have at our company, especially when it comes to hiring, is something that's really paid off for us. And I would say that every company should be looking at that. Now, I want to ask you something, because you have a lot of really great ideas around being creative and innovative in the recruitment and talent acquisition space. Let's say that you were talking to a founder that was getting ready to start their own TA function within an organization. What do you think are some of the core fundamentals or core principles of a great TA organization? Where would you tell them to start, and where would you tell them to focus?
Well, you know, pay for the best TA talent, right? And pay them competitively to, you know, in the marketplace. Make sure that you have folks within the TA team that are analytical, that understand the business strategy, right? Understand, you know, this talent is going to drive this particular, you know, vertical for the business, and this is how the impact is going to be in the business, right? And then make sure that you your team understands, you know, the type of talent that you want into the organization, that you're creating in an organization. Those three things would allow you to have, you know, I would say best in class, you know, talent acquisition function. Now, ultimately, the culture of the organization, you know, is at the end of the day, you know, the decision that helps a lot of people come into that organization. So you want to have that conversation and ask yourself as a founder, like, you know, what culture do I want to set up for this organization that I'm creating? And then have that permeate across the talent acquisition team and the talent team in general. And you see the results of that in the type of people that you bring in. But those three things, you know, making sure that, you know, you have an analytical function, making sure that you're paying the right talent to attract the right talent, right? There's always, well, let's just bring in, you know, young recruiters or folks in and see if we can convert them into recruiters and so on, and let's pay them below marketplace. And I'll tell you right now, if you're not paying your recruiters, they're not getting you the top talent. I guarantee you that. You know, if you're not invested in the development of your recruiters and talent acquisition team, guess what? They're not seeing the right talent. They're not able to interpret, you know, the skills that you're looking for in the organization into the marketplace to attract the right talent for you. If you don't have the right culture, then they can't speak to that when they go out into the marketplace to attract the right talent for you. So all of those things are combined in creating a successful talent function, you know, as you grow as a founder.
Yeah, I love that. It's such great advice. Let's dive in a little bit deeper there. Let's talk about the analytics aspect, okay? What do you think are the key measurements around seeing the effectiveness of your talent acquisition process, your talent acquisition organization? What are you, if I'm handing you a report, what are the first things that your eyes are going to, or what are the things that you're thinking that need to be captured to best understand how effective you are in terms of talent acquisition within a company?
Well, I mean, it's one of these things where, you know, First of all, you have to have the right people that, you know, in the team that think about some of these things as well, right? Because, you know, when I look at the dashboards that I've created, the metrics and, you know, how I measure performance and success with recruiters, it really comes down to, you know, how much bandwidth they have to be able to execute on some of these experiences, right? So, you know, what is that? What is the level number of recs, you know, and to their performance, and, you know, how quickly are they moving through the process and spending time and engaging with candidates and sourcing with candidates and coming through. But TA has hundreds, if not thousands of metrics that you can look at to measure effectiveness. But the recruiter effectiveness score for me is pretty simple, right? You know, you look at, you know, how long candidates are sitting with each requisitions, and, you know, and how long it takes for recruiters to move them through that process. And then all of that, you know, kind of comes together in that NPS score that you get at the end of the hiring process, you know, where candidates are, you know, sharing, you know, their feedback around what the candidate experience looks like, the hiring experience looks like for them, you know, and then all of that comes in full scope of understanding, okay, what is effectiveness look like in my team? But you want to measure the bandwidth of your team. You want to measure, you know, how long is it taking for each recruiter to do the most minimal task, you know, that it comes to, right, like opening up a resume and skimming through the resume, right? Can you provide them with automation and software that makes those things easier for them? You know, I would rather see my recruiter spending time with candidates and talking to them, understanding, you know, what they're looking for, and, you know, sharing our culture of where we are as an organization and why they will be, you know, additive, why they will be successful in being additive to the culture of the organization, than sitting there and trying to kind of do Boolean searches in my ATS or anything like that. There are systems that do that for them, right? You know, you want to make sure the recruiters are moving candidates and providing an optimal experience through the hiring process. I've always said, you know, like,
so
any candidate that is spending more than 2 weeks in each stage, you know, you're wasting your time.
Time is money, and you're going to lose top talent if you have too drawn out of a process. And if you have a lot of redundancies and overlap or long feedback cycles, good luck getting the best talent. Certainly your competition is going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I'll still tell you, I actually say, you know, even in this market, how crazy this market has been, you still have the best talent are not going to be available more than 3 weeks in the marketplace.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you something right now. Two things that I've seen over the last 4 weeks. I agree with you. The market, full-time hiring in particular, is turning. We're seeing a lot more going on from our different clients. We're either coming back to life or new clients, all different types of things happening there. So I think that's very positive. And I'll also say, for our company and the hiring that we're trying to do, I've never seen such great talent available right now, right? And they're excited to work at a company like ours. And it's awesome because, you know, our brand has grown, so that's great. But it's also about who's available right now. And so, you know, there's always cycles to these things. Great people are always going to have great opportunities and great work. So if you're sitting there and you're waiting and you're listening to this and hopeful, time is coming. It's coming soon. Yeah. Gambala and I know we're at the forefront of it. So I want to ask you this. We met when you were working at the NBA. And I'm a big NBA fan. Everybody, you know, I got some basketball shoes right behind me right here. I want to ask you, I heard you on a panel once talk about how, you know, the way that the league presents itself externally in terms of bringing in personnel and all the different things they do from a talent perspective on the court, right? It's a little bit different than what's happening on the back end in terms of hiring on the corporate side. What did you try to bring to the NBA? Where were you coming in to try to stand things up and get that to be more reflective of what we see externally from a talent acquisition perspective?
Yeah, I mean, my time at the NBA was really looking at the function and optimizing the function to, you know, to be able to, you know, if I'm a candidate looking at the NBA, you know, and I'm a fan, you know, so I'm looking at this amazing brand and I wanted to come in and experience that same brand coming as a candidate through the process. So my biggest remit was really kind of how do I merge those two experiences together to make sure that they mirror each other, right? You know, what you see externally is also the same experience that you bring in. But then also bringing in platforms that are best in class to allow for better hiring process, you know, launching new marketing campaign, the Bring Your Game campaign, you know, that you see on the NBA, on the LinkedIn and so on, right? those were some things that came through through my time there, you know, where we initiated that. And then activating some of these, social media platforms, especially LinkedIn, right, where, LinkedIn is a great source to be able to talk about the brand, but, you know, in a very professional way, but also showing the life of the MBA and showing what is going on, you know, for employees and, you know, trying to have a career at the MBA. So those things were key to bring in. And then, you know, the MBA was going through kind of evolution and growing, you know, direct to consumer strategy, launching the MBA, the League app. All of those things required a different way of thinking in terms of how we talked about talent, you know, how we talk about, you know, what is the MBA, right? So the MBA is not just a basketball organization. It's a digital, you know, technology company, is a digital marketing company, is all of these different things that, you know, you never really associate with the league, or a part of it. It's also a startup organization, right? In a way, right? So it's changing the mindset of what the league is and how the league operates. And I remember, the team going to some of these, conferences and career fairs, and to see the MBA there, right? It changed the narrative. Oh, actually, wait, the league recruits tech talent? Yeah, absolutely, because we're building, newer platforms and so on. So there's a lot that was going on at the league, and and there's still a lot going on there, from a talent perspective, but also just how the business is growing in general. And I think, it's one of these things where if you are coming into the sports and entertainment market and want to have a career in sports and entertainment, the MBA is definitely a place that you want to look at, because I think you can see, the transformation both from a technology perspective and culturally where the MBA kind of sits within the social narrative and the social zeitgeist of in this country, right? You want to be part of that, so I would definitely, if I'm coming out of school today and I'm looking for an opportunity to go into sports and entertainment, that is the place to be.
Where do I get an application? So are we going to Suns Knicks finals in July? Is that happening? I'm gonna hold up my end of the bargain, man. You got to get your team going.
Look, I'm still holding hope for my Knicks, man. Last year, we were there in the postseason, right? So I'm hoping that this year,
incremental improvement. Keep going. You keep moving up that chain. You'll get there.
So I live in Maine, and everybody around me is Celtics fans. So it's always very interesting conversations during the postseason.
Yeah, for sure. I was actually in Boston pretty recently, and they had a bunch of Celtics billboards up, and they love their Celtics. There's no question about that. I'm very excited about the season. I want to ask you a little bit of a different question. Is if I ask you for the moment or initiative or something you did in your career that you're most proud of, right, at any organization you've been in, what comes to mind when I ask you that?
I tend, every time I've had that question, I tend to focus more around, the people that I've developed, right? I've had some really great people on my team. Some folks that never believed that they were or they could have ever been in TA or be successful in TA. But being able to show them the path and help guide them and develop them and train them, to be, some of the best recruiters, some of the best leaders and talent. That to me has been, very proud. I know it's almost like a cliche, but no, it's actually for me that is important. I mean, I can go back and look at every single team that I've had. There are one or two people in there that never thought, of a career in talent acquisition, right? But then being able to bring them in and give them, empower them, right, to be able to kind of create these strategies and implement and drive it, right, and see the results from it, right? Those things are powerful. And I get goosebumps right now even talking about that. Those things are powerful, right? The best thing that you can do in this position or in the positions that I've been as a leader is really empowering your team and developing them to be able to achieve whatever they put their mind to it. And, for the team and for the function, for the organization.
It's not cliche. It's what all great leaders would say. I knew you were going to go there. I know you that well. So I'm glad you said that. And I've met some of the people that you've had the opportunity to develop, and I know they're better off because of it. So that's absolutely a great answer. All right, I'm going to take this a little bit of a different direction again. So you said you live in Maine, never been to Maine, never traveled there, never lived there. Don't know much about it. I've never been. I've been to like 40 to 50 states. I have not gotten to Maine. So I need to hear right now. Why should I go to Maine? What's the great thing about Maine?
Listen, if you love four seasons, if you want to experience the full four seasons that, you know, everyone wants, right? Maine has it, right? You know, if you like recreational, Maine has it. If you like seafood, you got it, right? If you like to go hang out camping and, you know, be in farming and all of that, or be a hunter, Maine got it all. You know, it's a pretty big state. One of the things that I love about Maine is, you know, within 5 hours, I can go to, I'm in Europe, you know, I'm in Canada, I'm in Boston, I'm in New York, right? All happening in within a 5 hour window. But it's a great state. The people are amazing in Maine. There are more trees in Maine than there are people. So, you know, so you get fresh air here, you know, almost on a daily basis, right? If we weren't dealing with the Canadian fires. But Maine, man, you gotta enjoy, you gotta come.
All right. Listen, you had me. I like lobster rolls. A nice 5 hour jaunt to Europe is not bad. Okay. You're right. There's a lot going on there. Listen, and I'm going to turn off a lot of people right now, but I'm going to tell you where I come from. And then I'm going to tell you why the Four Seasons thing, everybody brings that up. And I'm just going to push back a little bit. Okay. Grew up in Southern California. Then moved to Arizona, and I've lived in Florida. So granted, I'm not your Four Seasons guy. I like the warm weather. I've been in the Sun Belt. But what's with the Four Seasons, right? If I want to go experience the winter, I'll get a JetBlue flight.
I'm telling you.
I'll head over there.
If you are in Maine in the fall and see the trees turn and change color, I'm telling you right now, it's stuff of Hallmark movies, man.
What's that do for me? What do I feel more fulfilled? I mean, like, I don't get it.
There's a little, it turns like your heart, like, oh, this is beautiful. You know, go apple picking with the kids and so on, man. It's beautiful, man. You got to come.
Here's what I'm doing. I'm going to set up a trip. You and I are going apple picking, and I'm going to see if my heart feels full and fulfilled after I do that, okay?
Yeah. And then in the summer, you can come by and we can go, you know, we can go on the water and go blueberry picking in Maine and all of that good stuff.
I mean, two of the four things that you're selling me on Maine is fruit picking, man. That's what you guys got going up there. All right, listen, I'm not going to hate. We have a really large Maine listenership, so I want to make sure I don't offend anybody. But, okay, I'm open-minded. I'm going to see what it's about, okay?
It's a great state. You know, look, I left New York. I still come down to New York, you know, a couple of times. But I grew up in the Bronx, and, you know, the hustle and bustle in New York is in my DNA. But I'm telling you, man, you know, you come up here, life is slow, you know. And my mother is your traditional African mother, man. And she comes up here, it's just like, there's so many trees. You can hide a body. I was like, wait, mom, what are you talking about? But that's her way of showing how much she loves it. And she always, whenever she has an opportunity to, she's coming into Maine to come visit, right? Because you got to get away from New York every now and then.
Yeah, listen, the Bronx, it's definitely, you know, you don't know where to hide those bodies, right? So if you need a good forest up in Maine, that's where you go.
Yeah, it's a very, very old African mother joke, you know.
No, I'm with you. I totally get it. I get it. So listen, I'm gonna look into it, and maybe I'll get some tickets. I don't even know if I can get a direct flight to Maine, but I'll figure it out. I'm going to come visit you.
You get a direct flight to Maine. There's direct flights from
Maine. Right. You know what? I'm being a hater. I'm going to cut it out now before I piss anybody off. All right, man. So listen, you know what the show's about. We love talking about hiring. You are an expert in the space. You've done it for tons of companies. You've hired for your team. So we're going to dive into that a little bit. I want to learn a little bit about what's important to you. I think what I want to do is I want to ask about you building your own team, though. I really want to focus this word. Listen, this is a talent acquisition show. You're in the space. I'm in the space. Let's talk about it from a talent acquisition perspective. So if I had to ask you to tell me your overall hiring philosophy, when you're bringing recruiters onto your team, I want to know what skills and behaviors you're focusing on to bring in top talent to your team for that role particularly.
Yeah, I'm generally looking for recruiters that are analytical. I'm looking at recruiters that are comfortable with complexities of, you know, building and developing, right? Because there's, you know, in TA, there's always some sort of building and developing happening, whether it is, you know, with candidates or with hiring managers. So recruiters are able to kind of speak to that and, you know, kind of guide and walk people through best in class experiences and so on. And you know, and I want recruiters to also bring their, you know, kind of innate personalities and authenticity and their life experiences, you know, to, you know, the positions, right? Because those are the things that, you know, can drive a recruiter to be successful, right? You know, based on, you know, some of those lived experiences they've had can serve as a fire in them to drive them. I look for recruiters that are continuously looking to learn, you know, but at the same time, you know, are ready to have fun when needed, right? You know, and my philosophy is, you know, pay them right, you know, pay the best talent and get them out of the market pretty quickly, right? So when I go into market looking for folks in my team, I'm looking for all of those things. And I'm also saying, hey, look, I'm going to pay you right. I'm going to make sure that you're competitive. I'm going to make sure I provide you with the development that you need. And then you come in. Every team that I've been in, there's been some sort of development. There's been some sort of transformation. You know, I've yet to see, and, you know, I've talked to and I've been to a lot of different organizations. There's no talent acquisition team that is 100%. You know, there's always something to be done or something to do. So you always want to stack your team with folks that are comfortable with those things, right? If I have a recruiter that's telling me, you know, I can only work with this one particular ATS, you know, I want to explore whether or not they can learn something new or they can learn a new ATS. And if that's not the case, and if they're not comfortable with that, then that may be a very difficult, you know, transition for someone to be on the team. So you always want to look for folks that have the dexterity to be able to learn some of these new technologies, you know, new philosophies of engagement of with candidates and hiring managers and so on.
I love that. All right, so let's talk about, if I ask you for a memorable interview experience, you don't got to name names. Maybe it was you interviewing, maybe it was you interviewing somebody else. What comes to mind when I ask you that?
I'm trying to see here. I've had some really doozy, some interesting ones. I guess on the good side, you know, I think, you know, some of the best interview experiences that I've had is really, you know, you go through an interview, you go through the conversation, you learn from each other, from, you know, the interviewer or the hiring manager, and you continue the discussion even beyond, you know, that interview experience. And some of these folks, you know, I've interviewed with some folks that we didn't end up, you know, making a deal and coming to the organization, but end up being, you know, mentors and friends, you know, that we continue to talk to today. I've been in interviews, the other way, you know, where, you know, and I spent some time, you know, I've led D&I in global organizations, you know, so it's always interesting when I'm in interviews, and then you have folks that will say things that are not necessarily the most appropriate, right? And then you're having to, you know, right there and then in that interview, you know, correct them, and then you have this awkward silence and awkward next steps, but you have those as well. But to me, you know, an interview should be a conversation piece, right, between two people and trying to understand, you know, why each of us will be a good fit for the organization and what about the organization that I need to know. That interviews shouldn't be a test, shouldn't be a quest that you have to go through to try to seek answers or anything like that. It really should be a conversation between two people. So I've always frowned upon the idea, well, let's make them uncomfortable. No, what are you making people uncomfortable for? You know, we're two people having a conversation. I need to know what I don't know about your organization so that when I, you know, if this decision is there for me to make, I can fully be confident in knowing that I can come to your organization and be successful. And you need to know why I'm interested in the skills that I bring into the table, and have a conversation about that. It shouldn't be, you know, a mystery. It shouldn't be an odyssey to try to get people to get you answers or ask questions, you know, through an interview process.
Yeah, totally agree. It's fantastic advice. I hope there's a lot of hiring leaders listening. I want to ask you, what about like lunch interviews, dinner interviews, interviews with spouses? Have you seen those? Do you think those are effective? Do you think those are good ways to kind of get to the bottom of people?
Yeah, I mean, they're effective, but it could go sideways really, really quick, right? I mean, I had one leader tell a story. I mean, I'm sitting there You know, so yeah, you know, we took the candidate out, you know, took him out to dinner, you know, and told them that they can drink whatever they want. And then, you know, we were drinking, we made a deal with the waiter, you know, we were drinking water and looked like vodka. So the candidate just kept getting vodka, trying to, you know, be like us, and got completely wasted. It's like, how is that? How is that?
What are you trying to prove?
What are you trying to do, right? To get it right? You get what I'm saying, right? It's like, yeah. So, I mean, you should see me. Like, I was like, what the hell is this, right? Not, so it could go. I mean, I would never recommend, you know, getting to that level unless you, as a leader, you're fully confident that, you know, the individual representing the organization can really close the deal without making a mess, right? We shouldn't be putting people in a position where we're testing whether or not that they can tolerate alcohol or anything like that. That's just not okay.
I hope they got that guy or girl an Uber home, man. That seems like entrapment there. I don't love that whatsoever. Here's what I really know, though. You've got some stories about interviews, I bet, that you're keeping in. That's on the hidden episode that we did previously. That's so people are going to have to dig into those archives to find out, because I'm sure you've seen some things.
Oh, yeah. I've got some stories. But
we got some stories. We'll share those after a drink. I promise to actually have it be bourbon. I won't pretend it's something else, okay? What's your favorite question to ask a prospective hire?
If everything, you know, if compensation is not an issue, location is not an issue, everything fits and, you know, everything that you expect is there, why would you not accept this position? You know, so it's one of these questions that I ask, and usually I'd say 9 times out of 10, the response that you get back from that candidate is a question or something that hasn't been covered through the process, right? You know, why would you not accept this position? You know, everyone seems stumped, and then they're like, well, I mean, I wouldn't accept it if this, right? So that if this is something that hasn't been addressed, hasn't been covered, and it prompts, you know, a conversation at that point. So it's usually something that a question that you want to ask before, you know, an offer is actually presented. So you can make sure that you have addressed every single, gap that exists within that process.
I love that. So what about, you know, the famous at the end of the interview, what kind of questions do you have for me? What do you like when people ask you, or is there a question that you can think of that you really enjoy that somebody asked you? What's a good question for people who are, you know, get to the end of the interview process and say, well, what do you want to know about us?
Yeah. I mean, the one question that I love when people ask me is like, why did you say yes, you know, to this organization? Right. You know, and at that point, you know, I, as the interviewer, I am sharing what really made me say yes to the organization, right? And if I'm a candidate, if I'm an interviewee, you know, the response to that, I can understand the authenticity, you know, of that individual. You can also call BS through that question, right? Whether or not that individual is telling you the truth or not. But it's a great question to ask, and I love answering that because it shows the pride of, you know, the organization, the function. It talks about the culture. You know, at least those are the themes that should be coming out to you as an interviewee. You know, and it's something that it's worth. You want to know what's in it for that individual that you're talking to. You know, what was in it for them to say yes to that organization. And it could easily be, hey, they pay me a lot of money, I couldn't say no. And that's okay too. So at least you know how to position yourself in the offer conversations.
Oh, now I can't wait to ask this question. So why did you say yes to be the head of human resources at Pretty Flaherty?
You know, so Pretty is a phenomenal organization, one of the biggest law firms here that we have in Maine. And it's at a point where it's going through a transformation. And, you know, as we've talked about, you know, I'm the guy that you call, you know, to come help, you know, in a transformation, you know, to the next evolution of the company. And, you know, knowing the people in Maine, knowing the people at Pretty, and, you know, how fantastic the organization is, the culture of the organization, everyone in Pretty that I've met has been there 10, 15 years. You know, I could still be the new kid in the block, and I'll still be there 10 years, right? Like it's been great, but it talks to, you know, the culture and the loyalty of the company, and, you know, really the care that they give for their employees. But it's, you know, with any law firm, especially, you know, most of these organizations, the professional services, you know, there's opportunities to elevate, there's opportunities to evolve and transform. And, you know, it was, it called me at the right time where it made sense. And, you know, and I said, you know what, let me give it a shot. Look, and, you know, I'm someone that have, you know, I have a diverse background in places that I've worked and organizations that I've worked with, right? I'm industry agnostic. So did I look at it as a challenge? Absolutely. And I still look at it as a challenge, but, you know, sometimes you can't just sit back and say no, because you feel like, you know, it's too much of a challenge for you. You have to try it. You have to do it. And so far it's been great, you know, being there the last few months has been phenomenal, and the team has been great, building the team, you know, assessing the culture and implementing new policies, new strategies and so on, has been great. So definitely excited for that, for the journey right now.
Love that. All right, last hiring question. So when you miss on somebody, and we all miss every once in a while, is there a common theme of something that you should have done differently, or when you don't make the right hire, like something that you miss that's a commonality? Or
yeah, so when you miss on a candidate, I mean, it's usually we haven't done a due diligence in the first place in the screening process, you know, to get to that point, right? I think and then nothing hurts more than, you know, missing a candidate because of compensation at the end, right? We shouldn't have gotten to that point, right? If you miss on a candidate, right? That those things should be vetted out early on in the process before they get to the point of, you know, to the offer stage. But a miss is really, you know, when we miss a candidate, I mean, I have conversations with the team and trying to understand, what was the screening process? You know, how do we get someone all the way to the point that we made an offer for them to say no, right? Like you when you're making an offer, you know, you should all but guarantee that that person is going to accept, right? If you do the screening, right? If you've connected, you know, with the right people, and you really truly understand what is going to make them move from the organization today. And so a miss is really, you know, it comes down to what the screening has been and what that process has been, you know, to start with.
Yeah, that's a really good call. And listen, by the way, you're always recruiting, man. You brought up compensation and paying your people probably 4 or 5 times. I know
this is important.
People listening to this who are saying, I got to go work for Gimbala, man. He values me. He knows what I'm worth.
No, it's, I mean, it's important, right? Because, right,
of course, it is.
The best advice I've ever gotten was, you know, and with a mentor of mine early on, is take compensation out of the equation, right? You know, because if you can do that, you know, then everything else becomes easy, right? And regardless of where the market is, you know, people still got to get paid, right? If you think about, you know, where we are today with inflation level, and I'm seeing some posts, you know, you're paying directors 80,000. Look at what are you doing, right? Like, come on, no, let's not do that. Pay people right, and I'm telling you, they will be the best people that you will have, right? Because they know that they're not going to get a better offer in the marketplace. If you don't pay them right, what happens? They show up 90 days later, someone throws an offer in front of them, they're going to take it. They're going to take it, right? They're going to take it and run. So remove compensation out of the equation, and your life becomes easier.
I love that. I absolutely love that. All right, listen. People who don't know you, they don't know you're a Renaissance man. You travel all over the world. You're doing things on yourself with a startup and software. You've got your job at Preti. You're doing all these different things. So I want to know, it could be anything. What's something you're working on right now that you're super juiced about, you're super excited about?
Let's see. I mean, so over the last few months, you know, we've been working with, you know, addressing some of the talent gaps, you know, from a consulting perspective, you know, in Ghana, you know, so I was born in Ghana, grew up in Ghana before immigrating to the US. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to address, you know, the labor market gaps and opportunity gaps in Ghana. And, you know, and I've been doing that. And it's been incredible to give back to the communities that I grew up in. And, you know, I have a family foundation where we pay for scholarships for kids to go to school in Ghana, you know, full ride. So that's always been inspiring. So over the last, you know, few months, I've spent a lot of time, you know, traveling around Europe and the Middle East, you know, meeting some folks and, you know, networking with some folks. And, you know, raising some money for some of the foundation and some of the initiatives that we have, you know, to address labor force inequalities in Ghana. And I think, you know, we're going to be making some headways. We got plenty of news coming up in some of the stuff that we're doing. So I'm sure anyone that's paying attention is going to see that. But, you know, look, it's nonstop. And, you know, I've had the privilege and opportunity to work with some fantastic organizations that have put me in a place where I can be in a position to provide my expertise and experiences to others. And, you know, and to me, that's a blessing and, you know, to be part of.
We're going to double down on that because I know people are going to be interested to know Ghana and what's it like to be a professional out there. What is industry like out there? What's the market like out there? How is it different than what we're used to maybe here in the United States?
Well, I mean, so Ghana, obviously a British colony, and, you know, I'd say up until the pandemic is one of the fastest growing economies in Africa in general. You know, and if you think about just the demographic transition in Africa in general, you know, if we can address, you know, youth unemployment and underemployment in general, you know, the continent will be, you know, a juggernaut to be reckoned with across the globe just by the sheer number of youth there. But Ghana, you know, Ghana has been interesting where, you know, 40% of the economy is agricultural. You know, there's a small service industry, so it's 40% agricultural, about 15-20% that is services based. But you're starting to see this swell of, you know, tech industry is still growing, but there's a lot of media creatives. There's a lot of creative, you know, talent in Ghana, you know, from, you know, you see a lot of them in YouTube, you see a lot of them in social media and so on. But what Ghana really lacks is the infrastructure and the labor infrastructure to be able to address the gaps that exist, you know, in how you track labor from when, you know, an individual, you know, where they're going to school, what they're studying, you know, and how do we create an infrastructure for them to go into a career after they graduate. So those are some of the things that we're creating, you know, to be able to kind of create that infrastructure to say, okay, here's a centralized place where you can find jobs. Here's a centralized place where you can connect employers with, you know, with talent. And then, you know, invest in the development of these individuals and, you know, and the youth to go on and create high paying, you know, companies or acquire high paying jobs and so on. So there's a lot of work to be done, but I think if anything, if there's one country that can do it, is Ghana, and it's English speaking, and it's only what, time zone 4 hours difference, right, from New York, right? So it's in a great position where, you know, if you're an employer, you know, in the West, and you're thinking about, okay, so what is an English speaking country that I want to, that is not too far out? You know, I don't want to go to India, I don't want to go to the Middle East, you know, where else can I go? Well, you know, you have Ghana and some of the West African countries that speak English right there.
I love that. All right. How old were you when you left Ghana?
I was just about 13.
Okay. 13. So outside of family and friends, what do you miss the most about it?
Hey, food, man. You know, the best.
I was going to say, that's what I was hoping you were going to say. So what is the culinary fare like?
Yeah. Let me tell you, people will tell you this Nigerian jollof and all of that, you know, don't ever listen to them. You know, Ghana has some of the best food. Obviously, the best jollof in Africa is in Ghana, contrary to what...
What's jollof? I have no idea what that is. Tell me.
You don't even know what jollof is. Oh, my God. You need to come over to the house. But it's you know, like my mother-in-law likes to call it, like orange rice, right? It's, you know, it's rice and it, you know, it's a tomato base. But then, you know, you bake it and all of that and it turns and it's the best thing in the world. But, you know, jollof.
Is it got the crust at the bottom?
Oh, my God. The crust is the best. Let me tell you a story. I had a roommate here in the U.S. that I made jollof rice and we ate it, left the crust in the pot, you know, in the kitchen, left, came back. She was trying to wash the dishes. She poured rice. I cried to the point that I left. That was the end of our roommate agreement.
Is that now a deal breaker? If somebody
it's
ruins
a deal breaker, jollof, I mean, I'm telling you, the jollof, people will fight over the jollof rice, but I know It's the crust. It's the crust. That is.
Well, this is where we're going to synergize, because my family, my mom's side is Indian, and we make biryani, and it's the same thing. When you got that rice at the bottom of the pot, that's the best stuff. You fight for that. That's the best stuff.
Yeah, people will fight, oh, jollof rice. No. Get me the crust. That's.
All right, here's what's happening. I'm flying to Maine. We're going apple picking. I'm going to see some leaves fall, and then you're going to make me some jollofing, right?
I'll make you some jollof rice, yeah.
I'm totally into it. All right, last question. If you had to give advice to 20-year-old, early in career talent, Gimbala Sankare, that you didn't know now, but you know now. I didn't say that right. You didn't know then, but you know now. What advice would you give your younger self, or maybe anybody who's early in their career?
Never stop learning, right? Never stop learning. And that answer has changed over time. And I think, you know, if I was thinking back at my, you know, 20-something-year-old self, you know, coming out of college, you know, never stop learning. You know, we it's so easy coming out of school to say, well, I want to do this, and then you focus on doing that. But I'll tell you right now, some of the best talent in the marketplace are talent that can do many different things, right? And we live in an economy where the more things that you can do, you know, the better it is for you, right? Because then you have leverage. So never stop learning, you know, watch YouTube, learn how to make YouTube videos, learn how to be a creator, all of those things. Yes, you know, you can be an accountant, you can be, you know, in strategy, you can be whatever you want to be, you can be a doctor and so on. But guess what? You know, the economy is changing, the market is changing, you know, and you want to have leverage. So never stop learning. So those tools.
Fantastic advice. Gimbala, I really appreciate you coming on for the second time. We're going to have to do a third pretty soon. I really appreciate it, man. Good luck to your Knicks for the upcoming NBA season, unless they're playing the Suns.
Unless they're playing the Suns. I don't know about the Suns, but we'll see. You know, we'll see.
You'll see how it is. You'll find out all about them pretty soon, man. All right, brother? All right. Talk to you later. See you.
Man. All right.
Thank you for listening to Higher Learning with me, Oz Rashid. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.